I was kind of watching this story develop, and I saw how you broke it down on social media. And it's kind of the way I feel about it. Like, I was never one of those reporters, and I'm still not, to really get upset if someone doesn't talk to me. And that's completely within your right. All I ask is that you're polite about it and you don't waste my time. Let me know you're not going to talk. I'm cool. I'll move on. But a couple of things about this that surprised me. First of all, you're going to have to explain to me, and I think to our listeners, sort of the dynamics of the traveling pack that covers tennis, because I think it's different than a lot of other sports. And the other thing, and Richard mentioned this, I have been a little surprised at how so many tennis players have come out and said, okay, that's fine for her, but I'm still going to do my responsibilities. So can you maybe talk about those two aspects of this?
Sure. Dynamics at work here. One, tennis is a very, very different sport. It's not a team sport. It's not like it's the usual beat writers. The writers themselves are, so many of the people in their press corps are freelancers. It's probably one of the most, if not the most, international of the press corps, because you're essentially, the different countries are following the individual, right? People don't cover tennis. They usually cover players. So you've got the Serbian group that's covering the Serbian players. You've got the French group that's covering the French players. Obviously, when you have a player like Roger Federer, who's the only, really, I mean, obviously Wawrinka's there as well, but it's not like there's 10 to 12 Swiss players in the, in the top 100. So you're really just covering Roger Federer. So that's, part of the dynamic. And the other part of it, too, is, as the newspapers have shrunken, usually what happens is that you're only covering big events. There aren't that many reporters who are covering 40 or 50 or 60 events. You're covering the majors. You're covering the big four majors. And then you may cover a couple of the big Masters 1000s. Like I would cover, you cover Miami, you cover Indian Wells. Maybe you cover Western and Southern, Cincinnati leading up to the U.S. Open. I really didn't cover any of those matches. Like up to Wimbledon, you didn't cover Queen's Club or any of those. So the dynamic is really sort of up and down. And there's a huge battle in the press, in the press box as well, about who gets credentialed. Because so many of those folks are like, are you an actual reporter, or are you a fan, or do you have a blog? So there's all kinds of battles about who is actually asking the questions, and a lot of the traditional media sort of looks down at a lot of the people who are asking these bizarre questions anyway, because they don't think they're real journalists. So that's the one of the big pieces of it. And I think the other section that makes it really sort of difficult too is the idea that the athletes themselves, this is the only access that you get, which is the press conference, post-match press conference. There's no pregame. There's very few reporters have access to the locker room, so you don't get to walk in the room. It's not open room like you're covering baseball or something. So the press conference is the only time where you even really get a chance to talk to them, unless you put in an individual request to talk to the players. And they can say yes or they can say no to that. It makes perfect sense that a lot of the players are like, well, that's fine for Osaka, but it's not, going to be good for me, because those players don't have the financial support that she's got. They don't have the financial resources to say no. The tournaments make it very clear that it's your responsibility as a professional to speak about your matches. And also, those players need the exposure. They need to be seen out there in their matches so people know who they are as they begin to grow their career. So one of the big pieces about all of this is, okay, if we're going to talk about mental health and we're talking about some of the different elements of the media part of of playing in a tournament, and all these things are legitimate, it should also be noted as well that tennis is one of the biggest have and have not sports. And if you've got the resources to sort of create your own environment, you can do that in a way that the 80th ranked player can't.
So, Howard, like you, I've been in many, many of those tennis press conferences. I covered the U.S. Open for Sports Illustrated maybe 18 years. I mean, whatever the number is. It means I'm old, basically.
Yeah, and of course. And you guys did. Yeah, and you did Rogers Cup all the time as well.
Yeah. So what Naomi Osaka is saying, there is truth to that, and both of us have seen that. There are moments in there that, particularly for very young players, like, it is not an easy experience to recount something that means so much to you. A lot of times you're dealing with 18, 19, 20-year-olds who they might not have formal schooling. They might have been basically a professional tennis player, even if not, quote-unquote, a professional tennis player since their early teens. But I want to get to you, and this is sort of what's interesting to me, given what Naomi said, is this is just my take. Maybe you'll disagree. Unless the Nadals and the Federers and the Serenas and the Ash Barties and the top traditional top five, top 10 players in the world, unless they don't sort of go along with this, I feel like Naomi is just a bit of an outlier, and I think she has a right to be, but I don't think it fundamentally changes how the sport is covered. And then as it gets to what Blair and I were talking about earlier, I don't know if there's a carryover to other sports. My feeling almost is, if Osaka is a test case, isn't the real test to see if other players of her stature ultimately follow with the same kind of idea?
Sure, absolutely. And I think that there's a couple of different pieces to this. And I think that the first piece is Osaka specifically. It is her situation. And her situation is a very unique situation. She is coming on to the two worst surfaces of her career. She's not great on clay, and she's not great on grass. And she hasn't gotten to the second week of either one. This is also happening during an Olympic year, and it's in her home country. It's Tokyo. So there's this other question as to whether or not she's actually going, whether or not all of those different pressures that are going to come with being an Olympian. And so it's very clear that she is making a preemptive move here to deal with the enormous pressures that she's feeling. It really is, in a lot of ways, an individual question for her. And I think that she knows that this is a huge stretch for her. She's got four majors, and she's really trying to go into sort of lockdown mode because there is enormous pressure. And so that part, 100%. To the other point, the other part, when you talk about the carryover effect or what it's like being, you know, a tennis player in those situations, those post-match situations, it's an incredibly lonely sport. You don't have teammates. You don't even talk to your coaches during the matches. You don't really have a great deal of support. And if you don't have any money, if you're not a top player, you're not paying for everyone to travel with you. So you may be out there 10,000 miles away from home by yourself. Obviously, someone at Osaka's level now, she can afford to pay for the entourage and everybody gets to travel. So many of those players, they don't even have their own strength coaches. They share strength coaches because you've got to pay for everybody's travel. So 100% on both of those counts. As for the carryover effect, once again, I think this has way more to do with the class part of tennis. It's the upper echelon players. It's not the players who are 67th ranked. They're not the ones making this power move. I think that what's really happening here is there's a fair amount of the branding element, of the control element, that I think that Osaka is asking a question that applies to the top players who are going to follow her or be peers with her. And that is, do I have a responsibility to speak as a professional after my matches? And this is not the case for non-sports. I mean, the ball players are always talking about being entertainers now. They're talking about being movie stars. They're talking about being singers and just entertainers. And that sports is that last bastion where, why do I have to go out and do press every single day? This is the area where I'm concerned is, are we starting to reach a point where you're questioning whether or not the athlete has a responsibility to the tournament? Do they have a responsibility to the public? Is this another piece of the access question? And the three of us know this really well. They've been trying to kill access for 30 years. Mm-hmm. That is this one of the pieces that goes? And especially during the pandemic, there's all kinds of talk as to whether or not access in the team sports is just going to disappear. Are we going back into locker rooms? And if you take away that podium, then you're just creating even more distance between the public and the athlete.
Yeah, the only thing, the only response I would have to that is, in a lot of cases, the athlete's response would be, well, I'm not increasing distance because I'm going to tweet out my thoughts after a game, and people can take it.
Well, that's what I mean. That's exactly right, Jeff. And when you do that, you're essentially exercising control.
Right.
Because you're not answering questions, right?
That's true.
And so I'm not really talking about whether or not you're going to interact with your fans. I'm talking about, if I want to ask you a question about a line call in the second set, you no longer have to respond to any of these things. So the right. journalism piece of it is sort of the big deal. If you go back to Osaka's big match, if you go to her match in 2018 against Serena, when Serena had that gigantic meltdown, imagine no one being able to ask any questions about that.
Yeah.
And so this is the piece of it. It's a professional question in a lot of ways, and it's sort of where the sport is heading. But I think that, Richard, I think that your point is a really good one. That is this some sort of trend? It depends on who we're talking about. I think that the lower ranked players, they need media. They need they want to talk about their matches. They want to connect to their countries. They want there to be. And Osaka was the same way back before she went big.